Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. It is a good Friday. Steve Finley will be with us, former Diamondback great center fielder. We'll talk with Finns about Randy Johnson playing behind him. Randy goes into the Baseball Hall of Fame this weekend. That comes up in about 10 minutes thereabouts. Steve Finley will be with us. It is Friday. It's Goody at the Movies. Bill Goodykunz, chief film critic for Gannett, AZ Central. Always good to talk to Bill. And in the next 45 minutes, you're going to know what's going on in the world of sports, what I think, have some fun. So you're going to need to have a life, guys. That's the deal. Fridays, it's Goody at the Movies. There's not a whole lot going on this weekend in sports, honestly. The NFL training camps do get started this weekend. There's the Diamondbacks that are hanging in there. The trading deadline is next week and all that stuff. But Goody at the Movies. So that comes up here shortly. Let's get you caught on some things on my mind in the world of sports right off the bat. Brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. I'm going to have a busy Santan Ford weekend. The Sesmat household, we have an Explorer, a certified pre-owned Explorer that we bought at Santan Ford. We have the Ford Fusion, the hybrid edition that I drive. Show's done today. I've got meetings downtown. Tonight I've got a basketball game to run my son to. We've got this weekend places to be. Tomorrow night I've got a soccer match to call in Scottsdale. So I'm going to be busy. Sunday will be church and golf. I mean, I'm all over the place, probably like a lot of you. So when you have a vehicle that you can rely upon and trust upon, like we do from the Santan Ford people, that's how it should be. Are you in a vehicle that makes the most sense for you? Santan Ford and General Manager Tim Hovick, that's the place to get the Ford brand. Great brand, of course. Who wouldn't want a Ford? And the F-150, what a great truck that is. The Ford Fusion makes sense for me, especially the hybrid edition. Last week I was out in California with a good friend of mine. He's like, what a sweet ride this is. Yeah, it's the Fusion. It's the hybrid edition. From Santan Ford, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. So the big story this weekend is Randy Johnson going into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame on Sunday. Even if you're not a Diamondback fan, even if you're not a baseball fan, if you're a fan of Arizona sports at all, the scene around the state, Randy going into the Hall of Fame is a momentous moment. I don't know of another Diamondback that I can look at and say, for sure, he is going into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. Maybe the first baseman, the way it's going right now for Paul Goldschmidt, is off to a good start. Curt Schilling, you can make the argument. I'm sure, you know, you can make an argument, but not everybody that votes was the biggest Curt Schilling fan. Curt Schilling did an awful lot here for the organization, did an awful lot for Randy, did an awful lot in Boston. But we don't know if there's going to be another Diamondback that goes into the Baseball Hall of Fame. You know, Roland Heemond is in, but Roland is a front office guy that most of you don't even know. Tony La Russa's in the Hall of Fame, but he didn't go in as a Diamondback. He went in as a Cardinal in what he did for the game of baseball. So to me, it's really big that this is the first one that's going in. You can look around the sports landscape and say the next Hall of Famer could be Kurt Warner or Steve Nash that would go in representing the Cardinals. I couldn't see Kurt Warner going in as a St. Louis Ram. I could be wrong. I couldn't see Steve Nash going in anything other than a son. So we're going to have a little bit of a gap here before we have somebody else who goes into the Hall of Fame. So it'll be big. I will be interested to hear who Randy thanks in his speech. I think Randy will be really good in his speech. We've seen Randy in spring training this year hold court, you know, 45 minutes without taking a breath, really, just going on and on and on about the game. Who does he acknowledge? Does he acknowledge his time with the Yankees? I would think he would. Each step along the way, Randy's a classy guy. So, but there's probably going to be somebody that gets left out. You know, Damian Miller was brought up yesterday by Bob Brenly. BB would like to hear, and I'll talk to Steve Finley about this. BB would like to hear Randy talk about some of his teammates, but in particular, Damian Miller. I'm sure that Randy will acknowledge Bob Brenly in his time here, and probably Buck Showalter too. So there's a lot there around the speech side of it. My Randy Johnson story is like this. So in 1999, I get a phone call from Jerry Colangelo, and he says, Tom Brenneman's going to go on vacation, or not vacation, Tom's going to go do big Fox games, Major League Fox, and there's about 70 games. I want you to do the play-by-play of the games. You've been here in the Valley. You've been loyal. I think it'd be fun for you, da-da-da-da. Fine. So I do it. and I do it on radio. They move Greg Schulte over on the television side for those games. My travel partner was Joe Garagiola Sr., which was great. Imagine going to the airport with the guy that interviewed the Beatles, that did the Tonight Show, that has stories all over the place, and he's there with you, bumping around in cabs and just having conversation. We would be in airports, Joe would get recognized, and that would be that. Remember one time Joe got recognized by Richard Simmons, of all people, in a Dallas airport, and then he got swarmed, and everybody wanted Joe's autograph, even Richard Simmons, which I thought was funny. Randy and I were in Cincinnati. I'd finished doing a game, and Randy was pitching a day later, and this was towards the time where it was a night game with a day game following, so they flew him ahead of time so he could rest up. And we're in the Cincinnati airport, and our flight gets delayed. And we're sitting there together, and at the time, Randy and I had fine times. I mean, there were times where he wasn't too happy because I was the post-game show host, and you always have people that called in to rip on him. That was just what they would do. People wanted something to bitch and moan about. So on this day, we're sitting in the Cincinnati airport, and they announce that our flight is going to be delayed. And somebody recognizes Randy, and that led to autographs, but there weren't a lot of them. And there was like 3-4 kids that were with a mom, and he went and bought candy back for the kids. So we're sitting there, we're just talking about stuff, and suddenly the conversation starts to take a very serious tone about Randy and his dad. We get on the airplane, and I'm sitting next to him. We're in first class aisle seats, so we're next to one another. And he leans over to me as we're taking off. He's like, "And so, Brad, when I'm sitting there talking to my dad about, and he's going to pass away, and the flight's taking off, and he's talking about this intimate moment with his dad and the promises that he made his dad of what he was going to do on the baseball field and to be a man." And it was a side of him that you just don't see. And I don't know why he opened up in that way, but it was pretty cool. So you see guys differently. You see the guy that, like Todd Walsh is back there at Cooperstown with Fox Sports Arizona this weekend. And Todd has great access to Randy. They're music heads, and so they're constantly doing music stuff. So they'll put together some terrific stuff over on Fox Sports AZ. I saw him in a different way that I had to critique him every time he pitched for those years that he was with the Diamondbacks. And when things got bad towards the end, as they do with any player, you have to start talking a little bit differently about the narrative, and it didn't sit well with him at times. So, you know, there's other Randy stories of, yeah, he was in a brawl with the Giants and he put on the Giants cap rather than his own cap, which was funny. The time that he rounded first base and fell to the ground and they outlined him in chalk. The time that he struck out 20. The time that, you know, whenever he'd face McGuire or Sosa. There was all that stuff that was right here in our own backyard. And for the few people, the 98% that loved it, there was always the 1 or 2% that bitched, moaned, felt like they could have been ones that should have been there. They're the jealous athlete that's in their 30s, that he's a this and he's a that and whatever. Move on. Life's too short. I've never seen someone more dominant. Now, Charles was dominant in a different way. Charles, I was courtside when he scored 56 at Golden State, and he did so effortlessly in a playoff game. He dominated in that game. Randy would go out, and there were nights where Randy wasn't at his best. And to watch him try to figure out how to be at his best. Like, all of us have been there. You've probably been at your job if you have any self-sense of pride and not had the best feeling that day, and you've had to fight through it. There are days where I've done this for 30 years, and some days, not many, but there's some where you're a little distracted or you're a little off or you're a little this or you're a little that, and you have to fight through it. I'm not going to say I'm the greatest at what I do. I saw the greatest at what he did on the mound, and that's Randy Johnson. It was really something else. Around town today, so Jordy is down at Arizona State, Jordan Hamm, part of our staff. Today, ASU is finishing their summer workouts in the weight room, so we've got some pictures, I think, coming in on that. The Coyotes, as we speak, and if you're upset at me, some people were upset at me yesterday because that's fine. I don't take this stuff too personal, but I was yesterday just waxing about how the Coyote deal doesn't mean anything to me because how many times have I been in these situations through the years? It's fine that they're going to be here. I'm not bagging on the team. It's fine that they're going to play at Glendale and it's a 2-year deal. chances are pretty good, if I just go off the track record, most of the players that are involved in this today, politically and in the front office of the Coyotes, probably will be moving on. That's just how it is through the years. You don't agree with me? Go look it up. I'm right. So, yeah, it's a two-year thing. It gives them time to figure out where to move, who to go play for, and all that stuff, which is fine. Nationally, there's some things going on today. The Wes Welker, Champ Bailey story. If you didn't hear about this, Champ Bailey suggested strongly that he doesn't want Wes Welker to continue to play football because of the concussion issue. And I happen to agree with Champ Bailey on that. There's also a story over at Ohio State. When do you go to your coach and say, hey, I got to look for my NFL future here? And the coach should just say, well, no, we're not worried about your NFL future. There's a balancing act. We'll get into that. Love the Robert Allenby story. Kicked his caddy out as the round was going on. And the words that he used towards his caddy, I think you'll understand why the caddy quit. I've got that for you. And some other things as well. But on the other side, Steve Finley joins us next. Former Diamondback, great center fielder behind Randy Johnson on Randy going into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Steve's not a man of many words, never has been, so I look forward to visiting with him, get his thoughts. Deep thinker, that's next. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
One of the great Diamondbacks going into the Baseball Hall of Fame this weekend, of course, that would be Randy Johnson, one of the great Diamondbacks of all time. Steve Finley joins us for a couple of minutes. We see Steve when we're over on the coast or on DirecTV doing some work with the Padres these days. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm pounding along. It's a great, great weekend for the Diamondbacks, the first one going into the Baseball Hall of Fame in Randy Johnson. And just right off the top, Steve, from your playing time here with the Diamondbacks, what is your favorite Randy Johnson moment?
Probably hitting the bird in spring training, if I had to name one. I'm in center field and seeing a ball go into the plate, and all of a sudden it looked like the ball exploded into feathers. I thought it was nobody knew what to think.
And when that happened, did anybody give him a hard time about it, or was this that just off limits?
No. We said, there's probably going to be a PETA calling all these Humane Society all over him about, we said the one guy got, was it Winfield or somebody that killed a gull up in Toronto the one time, and they were trying to arrest him. So we were giving him a hard time. There's nobody off limits in the clubhouse.
How was he as a teammate, Steve?
It was great. He did his job. He worked hard. He led by example. Randy's not a man of a ton of words, but he was very personable, and we enjoyed him in the clubhouse.
Were you too close at all?
I mean, what do you call close? We spent 6 years together. Most of the season, most guys, you get along with everybody. Yeah, I got along with Randy just fine. And once the off season hits, you go your own way. Most everybody does.
How did you do at the plate against Randy when he was not on your team?
I faced him in the minor leagues, which was not a lot of fun. he had some control issues. I was like the movie Rookie of the Year, like the back corner of the box as far away as I could get. Cause it seemed like I was dusting myself off about every other pitch. But my first bat in the big league, I hit a double. Then he had issued me a bases loaded walk, and then I struck out about 10 straight times. Mm. And then when I got traded to the Dodgers, he struck me out two more times when I came back to play, and then I actually hit a home run off of him. And then he struck me out a few more times after that. I mean, it was nothing pretty. It was just a few hits here and there. I think two, we'll go to be exact, and a lot of strikeouts. He was no fun to face from the left side. My philosophy was he made every other left-hander seem like a piece of cake.
So your approach when you went to the plate against him was what?
Survive.
And you couldn't do film or any of that stuff, right? I mean, or could you?
Well, you could do film, but it would really make you more depressed going into your bat. You just went up there and you hoped to get a fastball that you could put the bat on. His slider, yeah, you know what? His slider, his fastball when he was wild, he was usually wild up and into lefties. And his slider, when it was going to be a strike, would start at you. So you had to make a determination in a fraction of a second whether you were to stay there and swing or bail to the ground. And, you know, there was no diving out over the plate against Randy. And it's the reason he changed lineups. He's like one of the few pitchers in the history of the game that changed lineups every time he pitched. Mm. The left-handers hit the showers that day. I mean, and it was usually not their choice. The manager said, look, I don't want to do this to you. I don't want to ruin your stroke or whatever. And so yeah, he was a lot of fun to play behind for me because it was either a strikeout. They were either late on the fastball, righties hitting it to right field, or pulling the slider down the left field line. So I pretty much got a day off with him.
Yeah, yeah.
In center field.
You said you did get one on him, though. You did take him deep once, right?
I did once. And you know, he had struck me out a couple of times in the game. And I just guessed he was going to throw me a fastball. And he left it up and out over the plate. It was just one of those perfect moments that you get against the guy. And I remember sitting back down the bench and looking between guys standing up at the rail, and he wasn't even looking at the hitter. He was looking over at me on the bench and just shook his head and then went back to pitching. That probably is one of my favorite moments of Randy, to go back to that question. Mm-hmm. And then the next day he says, I'm never throwing you a fastball again, to which, to his credit, he never did after that. It still got me out every time.
Steve Finley with us for a couple of minutes talking about Randy Johnson going into the Baseball Hall of Fame this Sunday. Brad Susmat, Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. You alluded to it just a little bit, but talk further about when you played behind him in center field. Could you tell it would be a special night? I mean, every night behind him could have been, but could you tell, man, tonight could really be something special?
Yeah, you could, you sense whenever he was locating his fastball just on the black on that inside corner and then starting his slider in the same spot, and you would see guys swing where it would almost hit him in the back foot. He just a lot of ugly swings. But when he was on like that, you could tell the ball when you look at the velocity, and you know, he might start the game off at 93, 94, but by the second inning, he was up to 98. Or if he came out of the gate at 97, 98, you knew it was going to be an electric night. And when he was like that, it was always a chance of no-hit stuff.
What was it like when he struggled early in a game and he had to work that much harder to find himself from your vantage point? Was that even more impressive?
Well, I think that was Randy learning how to pitch. And he had to do that later on in his career because he didn't start every game off like when he was young at 97, 98 miles an hour. He might start off at 92, 93, 94. And so he had to learn to pitch a little bit. And then by the time he got to the third, fourth inning, it was lights out. He was loose. And here comes the, you know, he would pick his spots for 97, 98. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what really helped him grow as a pitcher at, you know, later on in his career when he couldn't throw 98 all the time.
The notion and narrative over here has been that Schilling pushed him to become that much greater. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think anytime you have two great pitchers on one staff, they end up pushing each other because each one of them wants to outdo the other. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a lot of time they refer to the two-headed monster because nobody wanted to face those guys in a series. You go play in a series and you got Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling that are going to be setting up against you. You know, you were trying to win one game. And, you know, so that kind of pushing, obviously, I mean, you can do that. You can look back at many staffs when you had great pitchers on it that they all pushed each other. So I think their relationship was no different. They each wanted to outdo each other.
Yeah. And if you talk about dynamic twosomes, that would have to go down as one of the all-time greats. I mean, just look at
absolutely. Absolutely.
The ability of Damian Miller to work with Randy. Bob Brenly talked about that yesterday and at great lengths, how he hopes that Randy acknowledges Damian and that Damian was never somebody that wanted the attention, but that the catcher had just as big a role in getting Randy there. Your view on that?
Well, I think a catcher is part, I mean, they have to be brilliant in their game calling. They have to be part psychologist. They have to be part, you know, hitter behind the plate. They have to hit. They have to catch. They have to manage the whole game. And Damian did that fantastic. You know, he handled Randy almost every time. And you know, you get used to catching a guy. You know what's working, what's not. He knows. He knew when to switch gears and move when a certain pitch wasn't working. And that's invaluable to a pitcher that when he looks in out there and a sign goes down, that he has confidence in what that catcher's putting down, and now he just executes a pitch.
Yeah. I mean, Damian was able to connect with him, I guess is the right way to put it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what a catcher has to do with the guy that's out on the mound. He has to connect with him. So, like I said, when he puts down that sign, that pitcher just knows he has to execute the pitch that's put down there. Now, he might change his mind here and there. and he has conviction to throw another pitch. But that's when you see a lot of meetings at the mound going, hey, let's, what are you trying to do here? Let's talk about this and let's get a plan. But Damian was fantastic at that, and he was invaluable to Randy. A
couple other questions. I'll let you go, Steve Finley, with us. Appreciate his time with Brad Susmat. Game 6 World Series. Take me back there where Randy's just getting it done, and you guys are taking it to the Yankees, and BB leaves him out there, but then takes him out knowing that he's got to be maybe available for Game 7.
Well, I remember going to him, and it might have been like the sixth inning. I was like, Randy, why don't you get out of there? We might need you tomorrow night. He goes, I've already thrown enough pitches. There's no way I'm going to pitch tomorrow. I was like, hey, you never know. You never know. You know, and he went out. I think he pitched 7 innings in that game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like that. And, you know, the game was well in hand at that point, and he took him out. And, you know, you look at it and go, yeah, probably not going to be available tomorrow. But, you know, we had a secret weapon in our massage therapist, Russell Nua, who had helped Schilling pitch in the 3 games, and he immediately started working on him. And, you know, obviously Randy did what he did. When he came out of that dugout and ran down to the bullpen, you know, I think it gave a shot of energy to everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And without seeing him throughout that series, or actually seeing him in that series, it felt to me like, I don't know, Steve, that there was a closeness. You guys were already very, very close, but that extra step that he had that night will go down as one of the indelible moments, I think, for Diamondback fans, of him just running down the line. It had nothing to do with the game. It wasn't a ball or strike called or a ball hit out of the park or a great catch. It was just merely a teammate running down the line, which sent a very strong message.
Absolutely. You know, you have Kirk Schilling on the mound, who had been dominant all throughout the playoffs, especially in the World Series, going on 3 days rest. And you have your other pitcher who had been dominant throughout the playoffs and had already pitched basically 2 shutouts in the World Series, running down to get loose. Mm-hmm. You feel good about your chances where the game is right then. And you know, it was definitely a momentum shifter at that very moment for the Diamondbacks and all their fans.
Before I let you go, I see you doing some stuff with the Padres. How's post-baseball career on the field for you?
It's been fantastic. I've been doing MLB International, going overseas with Barry Larkin and Greg Swindell. We're getting ready to take off this next Sunday to go to Holland for the elite camp of all the best players all over Europe to train them for 3 weeks. And doing the pre and post game for about 30 games this year for the Fox Sports San Diego for the Padres. So, you know, branching out a little bit here and there, and I'm also working at Morgan Stanley.
Oh, good for you.
They started a sports and entertainment group, and right now I've been invited to become a part of that. So we'll wait and see what happens there.
Good for you. Good for you. It sounds like it's all good. I appreciate your time and your insight, Steve. Thanks.
You got it. Thank you.
Steve Finley with us for a couple of minutes. One of the great Diamondbacks played behind Randy Johnson. Randy goes into the Baseball Hall of Fame this Sunday. Good to hear from Steve Finley. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. Good Eat the Movies in about 15 minutes. Thanks again to Steve Finley. Good Eat the Movies comes up in about 15 minutes. Getting ready for a great sports weekend. Sports360AZ.com. Brad Susmat with you day in, day out for a couple of hours. We do our thing, and it is also on AZ Central Sports. Appreciate the partnership with them as well as we continue to grow by doing our thing. There's some stories that I want to get to before we get to Bill, some sports stories, just a little bit of a different spin on them, and some things going on around town. So 10:30 in the morning on a Friday down at Arizona State right now. This is just finishing up. They're doing their summer final workout in the weight room. This gets all the football fans jacked up for Arizona State. Mo Latu this morning. Mo is one of the strongest of the strongest of the team. So he did the bench press this morning. I think we've got a picture of it. 47 times at 225 pounds. 225 pounds, Mo Latu did 47 reps this morning. Crazy.
Yeah, that's like lifting me plus more pounds 47 times.
You're not 225. You're 250? Really?
Not nice.
Are you?
No.
What do you think I am?
You weren't listening. I said, oh, no, I didn't explain it right. I don't know.
Yeah, try it again.
I don't really guess guys or girls' weight.
Oh, yeah, don't guess. No, you know what? You can guess girls' weights when they get to the 26th, 27th year because it doesn't matter. I mean, Let's just put it this way. He'd be benching me and a little bit more of me. I'll leave it at that. And he'd probably be doing the same thing with you. So that's going on. And then DJ Foster addressed the team. This is kind of like, okay, we're done. And Jordan Hamm is down there for Sports 360, and he's going to have more on this today. But DJ gave kind of a rallying of the troops. This was this morning, just a short time ago.
It's crazy to think that he's a senior. It's just like, it. In a way, it's gone so slow, and in other ways, it's just flown by.
Well, you remember he was the top high school player in the state.
And he was Todd Graham's first big get, so
yep.
to speak.
Yep, and so, and you see him just grow up right in front of our eyes. The last picture that we have, they do what they call breaking the rock to finish out their weight training session over the summer. This is kind of like school is out, we are all done. So they had breaking of the rock that took place down there as well today, and there's the rock. There'll be a video up on all of this in hearing from players and some of DJ's speech. I guess Jordy's got DJ's speech too. That'll be up on sports360az.com later today in video form, so you can check all that out. I thought last night was pretty cool watching the Diamondbacks. They're circling the drain. They're just kind of hanging in there. It's been a good season to this point, a season of transition with La Russa and Stewart and Chip Hale and all that. They brought up a kid named Zach Godley to pitch last night. When I say a kid, I mean a kid. He was at Class A Visalia at the start of this year. When I say Visalia, Visalia is like driving through Superior. There is nothing to see in Visalia other than the one or two off-ramps, and that's it. If you're from Visalia, you know and I know it's not a place you want to spend the rest of your lives. If you're the mayor of Visalia, I'm sorry, try to aim higher. That's just the way it is in Visalia. Nice people there, though. He was at the Class A. I guess I'm not getting a job in Visalia. Cross another one off the list. He was there at the start of the season. Then he went up to AA for a couple of starts. Last night, he went six innings, Zach Godley did, for the Diamondbacks. He struck out seven. He did not give up a run. He left the game. Afterwards, the Diamondbacks did a very cool thing. They had the mom, they had the family there to greet Zach Godley after he was done with his obligations. And I think we have a picture of that as well, if we can get to the picture quicker. There it is. And that's what we like to see. So that happened last night. Jim Harbaugh. So this is something that happened a few weeks ago on the college end of things. Jim Harbaugh, while we were on vacation, threw out a first pitch, ceremonial first pitch, at Comerica Park. And the thing that I like about this little bit is Jim Harbaugh is wearing khakis and has the Mark Fidrich jersey. Do we have the picture? Do we have the video? There we go. Yeah, he's doing his thing. And, you know, to see him out there, of course, it's Jim Harbaugh in khakis first. Secondly, it's Fidrich doing his thing. He's got the Michigan hat on. This didn't happen last night. This happened just a couple weeks ago while we were on vacation. I thought it was kind of cool to sneak that in here today. Story of the day on the college football front is we're just a few weeks away from Ohio State getting started. There's going to be a lot around Ohio State in the national title game this year. Ohio State on September 7th will be playing Virginia Tech. There's been conversation all summer long, actually since last the title game, who's going to be the quarterback. Yesterday, Sports Illustrated reported that Braxton Miller is going to go to wide receiver and returner. This is a huge national story in sports. Cardale Jones or TJ Barrett are the other two quarterbacks. Cardale Jones was the one that decided to stay in school, but Braxton Miller is going to move in position. He's going to move to wide receiver and returner. Urban Meyer said this morning, well, we haven't made this official yet, but it's being reported. The bottom line is on the Buckeyes, there's already been a couple of defensive coordinators in the Big Ten that have said the mere thought that there would be three quarterbacks out on the field at the same time playing various positions scares the bejesus out of us. So you could have Braxton Miller at wide receiver. You could have Barrett and you could have Jones all out there doing different things at one point in time for the Buckeyes this year. I'd like to see Arizona State schedule Ohio State. I'd like to see that deal happen and get Gene Smith involved and Ray. And, you know, there's just something there iconic about Ohio State and ASU back to the Jake Plummer Rose Bowl. And to get those two teams to get after one another, I think it'd be a lot of fun. Add to that, yesterday, Ohio State gets a verbal from Joey Bosa's little brother. So it was a big day for the Buckeyes. I cannot wait to have Harbaugh taking on Ohio State. I know it's going to be in November. I can't wait to see which coach he pisses off first, because you know that it's going to happen. you know, his first game is going to be, what is it, 4 weeks from last night. 4 weeks from last night will be the first game of the college season. Maybe 5 weeks. 5 weeks. And it will be Michigan against Utah.
A team that has handled Michigan the last couple times they've played in recent years.
And a fiery coach,
understand,
by the way.
I understand it's a different regime and it's a different team and all that. But, you know, everyone that thinks, I remember a few years ago, oh, yeah, Utah's just going to go and roll over and play dead against Michigan. They've beat them the last two times. So.
Well, Kyle Whittingham's a fiery coach.
Mm-hmm. A good coach. Good defensive coach.
So if Harbaugh goes out and does his thing on the center of the field, I heard Rick Neuheisel tell this story once that he played against Harbaugh, and at the end of the game, they meet for the center field, or the center of the field chat, and Harbaugh just runs up and says, "How about that, Ricky? How do you like that?" And he ran off. That was it. Harbaugh, we remember what happened with the 49ers and Jim Schwartz with the Lions. You know, at some point in time, there's going to be something that is said from him towards another coach.
Or even going back to his days when he was coaching against USC, and USC was the big bad team on the block. And Stanford beat him, and there was the whole rift between he and Pete Carroll.
Pete Carroll, right. So you know that there's going to come something. Will it be right out of the gate with Kyle Whittingham? We've had Kyle on before. In fact, we're going to see them next week out of Pac-12 Media Day. Eric and I are going out to L.A. for a couple of days to do shows next week. So I'll be interested to see how that all plays out. But I cannot wait for Ohio State to take the field. And for Michigan to take the field. Now, the Big Ten is really interesting. I mean, really interesting. The Pac-12 this year, I think the Pac-12 is somewhat interesting. I don't see the big marquee names. There's no Marcus Mariota that I see. Cody Kessler is just because he's at USC. The other story that caught my eye is Robert Allenby. So Robert Allenby has just become low-hanging fruit for those of us with microphones in front of us on the PGA Tour. Remember earlier this year, he got jumped in Hawaii, and then his story changed. It was right before the Waste Management Open. He got beat up and all that stuff. Then you have Robert Allenby. Yesterday, he and his caddy, Mick Medlemo, had a discussion before his fourth shot at Oakville, Canada yesterday, the Canadian Open. Of course it's at the Canadian Open.
A discussion, huh?
Had a discussion. Fourth shot on a par five. Okay, fourth shot on a par five. That's not good. Allenby had wanted a 7-iron. The discussion focused on an 8, which is about 150 yards out. His shot fell short of the hole and into a creek. Triple bogeyed the hole. Finished the round with 81. Got into it with his caddy. I said to him, this is Allenby. I said to him, you know this happens every week. This has happened for like the last 3 or 4 or 5 months. We keep making bad mistakes, and you're not helping me in these circumstances, Allenby said. And he just lost the plot at me. He just told me I could go F myself. And I said, look, you need to slow down. I mean, just calm down. And then he just got right in my face as if he wanted to beat me up. I said, stop being such and such and calm down and get back into the game. And he just got even closer and closer. And I just said, that's it. You're sacked. This is Allenby. This is on the golf course in front of people. I will never have you caddy ever again. And we never spoke for the rest of the first 9. And when he got to 18, he walked off and he said some smart ass remarks to me. And I said, you don't deserve to be caddying out there. And he just got right in my face, threatened me. And I said, go F yourself. So the caddy comes back and says, well, yeah, that's mostly true. Mostly true. The caddy said, I just wished it would have never gone this far. But he is again using the media to make himself look like a victim. Again, whew. The discussion was about not waiting for the wind to die down, so on and so forth. The caddy said that Allenby said, I can't believe this fat expletive that starts with a C and ends with a T, loud enough for everyone to hear. There's a lot of caddies I can take, but a personal attack like that, if this was an office in any country in the world, that would have been considered bullying. Bullying? You guys are on a golf course, crying out loud. It's golf shots.
And that word's so disgusting. Like, you can use lots of different forms of profanity, but when you have to toss that out there, it's just really, you really have to go there, huh?
Here's the best part, and I'll get out of it after this. You're right, though. This is the fourth caddy to walk off during a round while working for Robert Allenby.
Not surprising.
So I don't know if he's used the C and the T. I don't know. Four guys. We're done. I cannot do 18 with you. I'll be the guy.
Is he like the modern day John Daly? Just really,
but John Daly was fun.
Exactly. Like I was going to say, just really unlikable. Because John Daly was very likable.
He's just the opposite side of Don Daly. I mean,
but there's always drama. I mean, we've had two pieces of drama within the last. When was the Open? The end of January?
No, it was end of January.
And where are we in now? End of July?
And he's gone through four caddies.
Most of the time, if you're not Tiger Woods and you're just a regular old golfer like Robert Allenby is, we don't hear from you unless you're winning a tournament.
He finished at 9 over. So I don't know if you're going to blame everything on your guy. But that got my eye as well. Goody at the Movies is next. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports day in and day out. We're here a couple hours a day just having fun, talking sports, things on a local level and national as well. Stay with us. Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports on a Friday into the great sports weekend, it starts with Randy Johnson into the Hall of Fame and a little bit of other stuff, and then football season really gets going with camps and all that. So it's time for you to go to the movies this weekend. I got to believe that there's something worthwhile. And Bill Goody Kunz joins us every week. Goody at the Movies, chief film critic for Gannett, AZ Central. Always good to catch up with Bill. There is a sports movie coming out this weekend called Southpaw that I have not heard great things about. There's a movie called Paper Towns. It sounds like it's pretty good. Where do you want to start this week?
Well, I didn't see Southpaw, so but I can tell you what everybody's saying about it, and I can tell you something about Jake Gyllenhaal, who stars in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Southpaw is, from what I'm told, is Jake Gyllenhaal. I think is one of the most underrated actors going today. I mean, he's been great in everything he's done in the last few years, and everybody thought he was going to get an Oscar nomination last year, where he was like the really sleazy. TV cameraman. What was the name of that movie? But he didn't. But he's supposedly really great in this. But the movie is just like every tired boxing cliche movie you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean, you know, some of those are good. You know, but he personally, I've talked to him two or three times, and you will appreciate this. Some guys you talk to, whether it's sports, whether it's entertainment, whether it's news, whatever it is. And they're there, and they know that they're there. They got to answer your questions, and they're fine, and they can even be friendly. But it's very rote, you know. It's really, like, professional.
Sure.
The thing with Jake Gyllenhaal was, man, he would do anything he wanted. If you wanted to go off on some crazy tangent, man, he would go right out there with you. We got into this thing of where the rumor was for a long time that he wanted to do a Joe Namath movie, and he wanted to play Namath.
Mm.
And that seems kind of cool, you know, when you think about it. And usually they won't talk about that stuff. And I said, hey, you want to talk about this Namath thing? He said, yeah, sure, man. I'd love to do this thing. And then we got to talking about it. And then somehow it led to him being all beefed up for this movie that he was in. And he said, and I thought you were a Joe Namath man. And I was like, oh, yeah. But and then the next time I talked to him, I said, you know, you'll have no recollection of this. And he said, well, you're right. And I said, but you wanted to do this Namath thing. And then he talked about it again. And he was just so cool. And he would just, you really appreciate those guys when they're willing to help you make your job a little easier.
Why has there not been a movie on Namath? I mean, I think that project sounds really interesting to me.
I do, too. Yeah. I mean, but I guess the problem that you start to run into right now is the target audience is too old. And as you can tell by looking at the theaters, you know, not just in the summer, but all year round, you know, it's really a 16 to 35, 16 to 40 world. And I don't know if there's a lot of 40-year-old guys even that still remember Namath, and certainly don't remember him as he was.
Sure.
He was one of those guys that, I don't know, when you were a kid, did you ever read those, like, biographies of sports guys?
Absolutely.
Me too. You should check them out at the library. I don't even know if they have them anymore. They were cheap little dime store novel kind of things, but they were biographies, and I remember I read Namath, and it was so cool because he wore those white shoes, because they wore them at Alabama, and then he wore them, you know, and that was actually controversial. That was too flashy for people back then. And I read one on him, and I read one on Pete Maravich, and they honestly formed my feeling about sports, I think, probably more than anything else.
Now that's,
I was just reading about those guys.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, let's get to the movie that you did see, the movies you have seen. Paper Towns. Paper Towns. Is this any good?
It is good. It's a movie by the John Green, the same guy that wrote the novel for The Fault in Our Stars, which was last year. It was just a teenage tear-making machine. I mean, it was actually good, but this girl was dying of cancer, and she really is dying, and as they tell you at the beginning of the movie, you know, it's not a happy ending kind of thing, but she meets another boy in this support group, and they fall in love, and it's And it's and I mean, my daughter and my son went to see it, and I said, "At which point did you start crying?" And she said, "As soon as the lights turned off."
Oh,
I just she said, and I never stopped. I mean, it was one of those kind of movies. This is a kind of a coming of age movie. It's interesting in a lot of ways, where this boy, he's a kid, and this girl moves across the street, and he falls in love from age 7 on. You know, it's just one of those kind of things. She is not quite as interested in him. And they go off and they have an adventures and they get in trouble and all this stuff. But not real trouble, like kid trouble. But then when they get to be seniors, they've gone their separate ways. I mean, she's kind of gotten really popular. She's really pretty. She's in with the in crowd, running around doing stuff. He's more a geek. He's going to go to Duke, and he lives in Florida. So that's, you know, he's a really good student. And he has kind of nerdy friends. But one night, just like she used to, she comes to his bedroom window and says, "Hey, you want to have the best night of your life or whatever?" And they're going to, and she wants him to help with these adventures. Then she disappears. And she disappears from time to time. She's like this kind of wild child that runs away a lot. But she always leaves clues. He thinks that these clues are for her, or for him to come find her. And he gets his friends and one of her friends to go on this like road trip with him and look for him, look for the clues, then go on the road trip. It's all, I mean, and it sounds pretty cool, right? And it is. I mean, it's got sort of all the stuff in those teen movies that you like. And they do a good job sort of getting around the cliches. Like, her best friend is the beautiful high school girl who seems stuck up, but it turns out she's actually kind of cool, and she's, you know, nice like the rest of them. And she kind of gets to be friends with one of the nerdy guys. But the problem that I had with it was the main girl. And I can't pronounce her name, but she's like one of these models, friends of the Kardashians, my children tell me. And and she's very pretty, but she's just not that good. And she's a problem that I had with the last movie with Fault in Our Stars is the guy who had cancer was one of these kind of, there's a smugness to him. He like knew everything.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be an attractive quality, but to me it was really off-putting. And this girl really has it too. She's given this guy, you know, this guy who's getting ready to go, you know, to Duke to become a doctor. She's giving him all this life advice, you know, like, well, you need to do this, you need to do that. And all she's ever done is run away from home a couple of times. I mean, you know, and it's like, it was off-putting to me. It's supposed to be cool.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be, you know, and some movies do that right. Now, I'll really age myself. There's this movie called The Sure Thing with John Cusack in it. And Rob, it was one of his earlier movies, and Rob Reiner did it, of all people. He's going to go across the country to meet this girl who is a sure thing, which kind of tells you they don't make movies like that anymore, where there's a sure thing. But he ends up hitchhiking. He ends up with this really uptight girl from his college. There's no fun at all. By the end of the movie, of course, she's fun. They fall in love. She's dumped her boyfriend. It's got one of the great lines of any movies ever, where like he's talking and she's like, "Oh, but you know, I can't leave my boyfriend. He's very responsible. He's very smart. He does all the right things." And John Cusack says, "Yeah, but does he make you laugh?"
Bill,
and
it's just like Bill, you've been on a rant on this movie. You love this movie. You circled into another movie and even went into best lines in this movie. You've spent five minutes on this movie. No, it's fine. I'm just listening. I'm just kind of redirecting you back to, let's get over to Bat Kid, okay? So Bat Kid is a documentary that looks like it's going to make me cry.
Yeah, if it doesn't, there's something wrong with you. do you remember, it was in November of, I think, 2013.
Yep.
And this Make-A-Wish thing, this kid wanted to be Batman. And they thought it would make like a nice little thing in the park in the little rural town he lives in California up near the Oregon border. But the family said, "Can we go to San Francisco? The kid had leukemia." And they said, "We spent all his life in hospitals. We can't go on vacation and stuff. Could we at least do it in San Francisco?" And they're like, "Yeah, sure." It becomes this huge thing that ends up with 25,000 people there. The president of the United States is on Twitter congratulating him. The police chief is involved. The mayor's involved. The cops work overtime for free to help out. All the people who played Batman in the movie simply got tweets and stuff. And it's one of those things where the weird thing about it is it becomes less about the kid and more about the project. Because the kid is 5 and he's kind of overwhelmed. He's not quite sure what's going on. But these things happen, like Make-A-Wish is overwhelmed. It becomes so huge, they don't know what to do. And the woman who runs it says, "You know, we were happy, we were excited, but man, we're crying because we're like, we're working day and night, 7 days a week, and we can't figure out how to do this thing." So the woman who's in charge of public relations at Apple the computer company calls up and says, hey, if you can use them, I'm going to come down there with my team for a week. We're just for free. We're just going to take over all the public relations for it and handle that for you. And she's like, sure. You know, Lamborghini offered them like 14 cars for the Batmobile. And it's just the thing that ends up making me feel good about this movie. I saw one interview that was actually pretty funny. It said it's a feel-good movie in the sense that the people who made it feel good about themselves. And there is some truth to that. But it really is one of those things where it's like, and this sounds cliched, and I don't care because there's too much irony now and people too afraid to be happy, but it just makes you feel good about the possibilities of what people will do, of like the good things that people will do, the way that they'll come together if there's a cause that they really care about, and they'll do it for free. And, I mean, you don't see that much anymore. And if you do see it, there's always some cynical, you know, other side to it. And that's not here. There, if you kind of, I think we're so used to waiting for that, you know, for that other side, for the other shoe to drop, for the shoe of irony to drop, that for a few minutes in this, you're kind of waiting, like, well, now what's going to happen?
And this is at Camelview, right?
Yeah, you know, this thing of irony reminds me of once when I was in sports. Remember when Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire were on their big home run tear?
Yeah, sure.
And I wrote this big column about how people are mad and they're saying all this stuff. You know, I don't care. People are so cynical. Why can't we just enjoy this? This is great. It gives us something to cheer for. And of course, it turns out I was 180 degrees wrong.
No, it happens. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate the time and insight as always. I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye. It was Goody at the Movies, Bill Goodykins. Yeah, that Bat Kid Begins. I think if I did it, I'd just be a blubbering fool because that just looks tough. That looks really tough. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. We have plenty of content up online for you that you can check out on our site, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, those of you watching today's show on AZ Central Sports here on a Friday. A couple of hours we do it every day. Things that we see in the Arizona sports scene locally, nationally. We do high school, college, pro. Been at it for a couple of years now, just doing our thing, having a good time. Thanks for being with us.